B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
The topics are many today as we talk with Fever 333 frontman Jason Alon Butler. We talk about his upbringing in Inglewood, California. His father was also a musician and spent time in and out of jail. I asked him what kind of advice his dad gave him.
He told me not really to trust an industry that was essentially established in order to squeeze money out of artists.
We talk a lot about the new record and how we expect someone who grew up in an opposite situation as he can relate to his music.
Even if it's something that people wouldn't typically listen to, or even if it's something that they don't even want to listen to. If you're being honest, I think they can hear you.
He's got a clothing line, which we discussed, some cool celebrities he's met. And since the band is so much like a modern-day Rage Against the Machine, I asked if he'd ever want to do anything with Rage guitarist Tom Morello.
That band is the benchmark, and that man is the benchmark for the music I play today.
That's just for starters. Jason Alon Butler from Fever 333 is my guest today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Got a good one for you today with Jason from Fever 333. And then afterwards, Al Beck's going to join me, right, Al?
I'll be here.
That's right. He's on the intro.
I don't know why I seem confused by that, but yes, I will be here.
Well, you're easily enthused.
True.
And then Janelle is going to join me as well, as he's piping in too, Janelle.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There you go. We'll talk about the major Tool announcement. Hell yeah, has a drummer, at least, kind of, sort of. The Led Zeppelin documentary. I got to tell you, man, I've been going crazy on documentaries on Netflix. We'll get to that. Some Woodstock news, Kirk Hammett, Lizzie Hale, all that kind of stuff comes up after Jason from Fever 333. There's a band with just an EP, then they put out their full-length record this past January. Pretty good conversation with them. They're like I was talking about earlier, like the modern-day, you know, Rage Against the Machine type of thing. So, Janelle, you're a big fan, eh?
Yeah, I can't wait for that show coming up, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. So they're going to be touring, playing festivals, playing the old Rock in the Range, which is now Sonic Temple. And, of course, you know, one of the questions I had to ask, and I wasn't sure. I don't like asking hack questions like this, but it's like I couldn't find anything about this on the internet, you know, here or there. So right off the gate, I'm just like, dude, what's with the name?
Oh, essentially, man, like the idea, like, right, like the idea of an idea, things that sort of catalyze and assimilate and move through different minds and communities and you know, demographics. These ideas and ideologies, they spread, right? It's like a fever or like a disease or a sickness. So that's where that came from. And then the three threes represent the three C's, C being the third letter of the English alphabet. And the three C's are community, charity, and change. And that's the foundation upon which this whole project sort of rests.
All right. So you've probably answered this question a billion times. So, like I said.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
I was just thinking about that. And by the way, is it just fever or the fever? I mean,
It's just Fever 333 now because some asshole tried to sue me.
Okay, because I saw that. It's kind of funny. It's almost like the Uncle Cracker thing. You know, he was just Cracker there for a little while. Then he had to change his name to Uncle Cracker.
Yeah.
the litigious part of the society. I got you right there. So,
right.
So, anyways, the record's out. Strength in Numbers, that's out. You just put that out this year, right?
Yeah, January 18th, I believe.
I was going to say, yeah, I got the 18th, and then 2019 kind of confused in my head a little bit. But Made in America, that came out a couple years back. And you know what? You guys just kind of put this project together in 2017, so it's done pretty well for you guys in a short time. What did you learn from, you know, your other bands and other things that you did before Fever 333 to help you kind of just push this one a little bit farther?
I was actually talking to my friend about this the other day. I learned that it's okay to say no. You know, it's okay to say no to things that you don't believe in. It's okay to say no to things that you don't think will serve you or your purpose or your messaging the best it can. And I learned that, you know, you have to really truly believe and like kind of really bet on yourself and your art, and then understand that what you want can be shared by others. And what you desire can be shared by others. And that is where the idea of quote unquote success can come from, or progress. You know, that's kind of what we're more focused on. And the idea of being progressive in that way can come because if you do something that, you know, you want to see, you would hope that there are other groups that want to see or hear these same things. So a lot of them, you know, we all make missteps, and that's kind of part of being human. And through the missteps that were made for me in my life, you know, whether that be my prior bands, projects, but also just like endeavors, anything that I've done, I learned a lot from and understood that it's okay to say no to something in, you know, to make sure that you don't compromise the authenticity of what you're trying to accomplish.
Now, I read up a little bit about your, you know, your childhood and your upbringing and stuff, and a lot of the bands I talked to, their parents weren't really in the music industry per se, but your dad was in the music industry, also in and out of jail and stuff. What kind of lessons did you learn from him, whether he told you or whether you just witnessed?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, that's actually a great way to put that. He told me not really to trust an industry that was essentially established in order to squeeze money out of artists. And I watched that happen to him. You know, I watched it happen. I saw the sort of decline of my father's artistry and him just at the time, a younger black man in American music and the industry as a whole. So, you know, I think I have a pretty healthy dose of distrust when it comes to, you know, why people are doing things and how they do them, and understanding that art and commerce, when they mix too closely, it becomes, you know, one of them gets compromised, and it's usually the art. So just trying to find that balance, and then, you know, decisions throughout life and sort of him being in and out just kind of taught me how to again, balance my own life, try to make sure that I always stuck to my guns, but making sure that I made decisions that would help me in the long term, that would keep me, you know, around and free in order to accomplish the things that I wanted to do. But ultimately, the biggest thing I learned from my dad was to always ask why, you know, who's got their hands in your pocket and why do they do that? And understanding that art is the most important thing at the end of the day, because that's the only reason that these labels or this industry is even here in the first place. And we get confused and we start to believe that the industry is what props us up as artists. But that is by no means the case. Without us, there is no industry. So we must understand that, like, the sort of chicken and egg situation is, you know, the artist came first, and the artist will remain, you know, the only reason these things are here are because of the art. So that's kind of what I got from it.
Now, is your dad still around?
Yeah. He's still in, still living in Inglewood, still.
Yeah,
and still doing music.
What does he think about your success?
Yeah, he's very, you know, he's happy for me, and he said things that I just never really thought I'd heard come out of his mouth, and that's a pretty cool thing to see, you know, and that's because of art, and that's because of the people allowing me to be the artist I am, and sort of see the types of my own gauge of success. And you know, and I think he understands that I learned a lot from him. And I think that that's, you know, if nothing else, that is rewarding for him to see that I was able to learn from both the good and the bad from his experiences in music.
Yeah. What does he say when you come home and you get a Grammy nomination?
he called me like in the fucking like really early in the morning, actually, which he never does. And he actually FaceTimed me with his wife and was, you know, like pretty emotional, which, you know, doesn't happen all that often with my dad. So he was really, I think it was cool. And I think that, you know, as children, we're extensions of our parents, for better or for worse. And in this moment, that was one of the better moments. And so I think it was kind of like he could see that, again, his teachings and his influence, again, both whether that be the better parts or the more tumultuous parts helped me get where I am. And I believe that. You know, I believe that my father has a lot to do with who I am as an artist today.
Yeah, I think all of our fathers, good or bad, has something to do. They can either, you know, tell you by example, lead by example, you know, the whole thing. You know, even my dad, my father grew up, I was the son of a guy who worked in a steel plant, you know what I'm saying? But he instilled a work ethic in me and the whole thing, you know, so...
Totally.
Yeah. So Made in America comes out a couple years ago. That's just like an EP, kind of a four song thing. Was that just like, why was it an EP? First of all, was it just to maybe feel out, you know, what was going on, or why is that?
Yeah, we had a collection of songs, seven songs that we wanted to release. And we felt that the climate was sort of, I guess, welcoming it. And we wanted to make sure that it was impactful. So we just dropped it. We didn't have a release plan, or we didn't have any sort of marketing. We just dropped it one day in March last year, and that was kind of it. Like, we just kind of put it out and wanted to see how people reacted to it. And also we wanted to say something, and it was the time for us to say something when we released it. And we felt, like I said, I felt like that was the moment in time where this project and these, this message, I suppose, would be, needed to be released by us. So that was kind of it, man. And we wanted to get it out there, and I guess, yeah, it was sort of to gauge the climate. But again, we, you know, especially me personally, I'm very reactive. I understand life is something that you have to take day by day. And, you know, that week it felt like we should release this EP. So we did.
He just woke up one morning. You're like, let's just release this. Set it out there.
Yeah.
And then Strength in Numbers comes out earlier this year in January. And this is a full record and stuff like that. And tell me about your preparation and getting prepared for this and writing and everything like that with the guys.
Yeah, so we just spent a lot of time in the studio and a lot of time on the road, a lot of time understanding what was happening in the world. You know, traveling the world gives you a really great perspective, a global perspective, and understanding that a lot of the things we discuss are global issues, are not just necessarily like American-centric ideas and issues. So that kind of helped us and prompted us to write the album we did, to sort of be a little more far reaching than just our country. And then, you know, working with myself, Eric, Steve, we also have John Feldman. We also have Travis Barker as a part of this collective. So between all of us, it was an extremely inspired and, I guess like forward moving, productive environment, because everybody wants to do something. Everybody wants to try something. Everybody is. And then we have the resources. We have John and Travis's studios. We have John and Travis's expertise. We have all of this sort of new network that we never had before. So we took full advantage of it, and we wrote. Anytime we weren't on the road, we were writing. And anytime we weren't writing, we were kind of on the road and trying to learn more about who we are as a project and an outfit, but also as musicians and artists and activists. And so we did that, and then we wanted it, like I said, we wanted it to be impactful, and we wanted to make sure that we released during a time in our climate that it was useful. So that's what we did and why we did it. We felt we had sort of garnered a sort of a little bit of a following, and people had invested in a very, very real way. And so, yeah, we felt like that was the time to do this. And then this is another reactive moment, but it's also part of the plan. And, you know, I think that the plan is to make sure that we affect people positively. So that's why we did that.
Now, you're talking about your upbringing a few minutes ago in Inglewood and stuff like that. And I was just thinking about this, you know, as I was listening to some of the songs earlier today, and of course, for the past several months. But it's like, how do you think, you know, your upbringing obviously affects like your music and your writing, your experiences and stuff. But how do you think that music affects somebody like in flyover country, like in Wichita or Youngstown, Ohio or something like that, when it's a totally different kind of thing?
I think it opens our minds. You know, I think if you're able to speak to somebody and sort of get somebody to feel something, because at the end of the day, we're just like emotional sort of sentient beings, right? We are very, very emotionally driven. And I think that music is one of the largest sort of catalysts for, and art is one of the largest catalysts for emotions. And it sort of kind of supersedes anything else when it comes to being emotional. And so because of that, I think that if you're authentic, and I think if you're honest, even if it's something that people wouldn't typically listen to, or even if it's something that they don't even want to listen to, if you're being honest, I think they can hear you. So whether they like it or not, they may hear you. So I think that that's kind of your best bet or your biggest tool when trying to reach somebody who's from a completely different demographic or background or culture or upbringing from yourself, is just being honest so that you're telling a story and you're opening your world to someone else. And if they are interested in it, then they can involve themselves or they can be a part of that through music. So, and also I just think that there's a sense of, I think that especially in that scenario, particularly that you mentioned, you know, like myself being from Inglewood and a kid from like Wichita, Kansas, you know, I think that there's a sense of adversity that has always been appealing to us as humans. And there's a sense of, you know, I guess like danger or curiosity of these other ways of life. And we've seen it throughout you know, from the chain gangs, or a lot of people that would, like, black artists that would perform for large white audiences in the past, to, you know, 90s gangster rap and hip hop like that. You know, I think that there's just this large sense of curiosity around another way of living, and a way of living that, that requires you to survive, you know? And I think that that is, that might be one of the elements that is attractive to people that may have not lived the same kind of life that I have.
Yeah, that is interesting, because I think I'm about 17 years older than you. I can remember when, you know, when rap and stuff was just starting to take hold back in the early 80s and stuff like that. It is kind of interesting to think about how other people, you know, live and survive, just like you said. But you not only got Fever 333 going stuff, you also got your clothing line in that. And by the way, congratulations on all your merch. I see your stuff all over the place, like your hoodies and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
What's the deal with your clothing line?
Yeah, it's called Gentleman in Real Life, and essentially for me, it was I wanted to offer. So from music, I was traveling around a lot, and I would see bands and different artists basically peddling their merchandise to younger people or to their fans, and a lot of the merchandise was just either poorly made, or it was you know, to me, not stylistically, you know, not very attractive, and I felt as though it was just another effort to make money, rather than like understanding that these people are going to wear these things, that they're going to have to hold on to these things, that they're using their money to buy these things to help you and to represent you and to sort of, you know, I guess, be like a walking sense of your art. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that, I wanted to offer to, like, better and ethically made and higher quality garments and items, and stylistically as well, to people that wouldn't typically be in the position or be in the stores that would offer them these things, or be at the shows that would offer them these things. So Gentleman in Real Life is an ethically manufactured, and, you know, considering how much it, you know, the cost and the margins are, we try to make these things affordable for people, and it's like an entry level into better made quality garments, and also, again, stylistically a little higher in fashion, and just trying to offer people more, and things that will last longer, and things that will, you know, just look different if they want them to, and understanding that there's always like a bridge or segue into different types of style or fashion or whatever you want to call it. And so with this company, we're just trying to offer that at a level where people may have not, you know, otherwise been introduced to it, and then make sure that it's somewhat affordable, considering our cost margins to make these things. A lot of things are custom and handmade and made in America, you know. So, yeah, we just want to offer more things. And I saw people buying a lot of, spending their hard-earned money on things that would only last them, like, you know, a month.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you need some Fever 333 hoodies around here, that's for sure, because even today it's like 40 degrees here on May 7th or something like that. But hey, you know, just talking to you and listening to your band and stuff, obviously there's like the comparisons of, you know, Rage Against the Machine and whatnot. I just did a thing with Tom Morello not that long ago, and do you know Tom? I mean, have you been contacted? I mean, would you ever like to do something with him?
Oh yeah, I'd love to, man. I mean, that's like, that band is the benchmark, and that man is the benchmark for the music I play today.
Right.
So yeah, we have a mutual friend. Her name is Allison Hagendorf. She does, she's like the head of rock, global head of rock at Spotify. She's incredible. I call her like the queen of rock and roll right now. And I believe that she introduced him to our music, and I think she was going to take him to a show or something in the past, but we haven't met, we haven't spoken to each other or anything, but yeah, I would love to. I think that he's incredible, and I think that he is, like I said, one of the most prime examples of what we're doing, you know, today.
Yeah, because I'm old enough. I played, you know, Rage when they were brand new, and it's like you guys, you know, almost remind me of like the second coming of Rage. Even not Prophets of Rage, their second, but I mean like really like the Rage Against the Machine. Even with the latest video for the new single, kind of reminds me of something that Rage has done in the past, like, you know, in the streets of New York and different things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, I would be like a total liar if I said I didn't love that band. Yeah. So, I love that band.
Yeah, One of Us, by the way, the latest single. Hey, the Scary Mask. What's this all about? It's coming up at the end of the month. I just saw something about this on the web.
Yeah, it's just a collaboration we did with Poppy, and we met this this girl Poppy through a friend of ours, an engineer friend who was actually working on her album. And so I was actually doing something for Fever, and he showed me it, and I thought it was pretty cool. It was like this wild song, and he offered me a spot on it. And then our guitar player Steven also was able to write some riffs on it because he also knows Zach. And then Travis was able to play drums on it. So yeah, it's like a Fever 333 Poppy collaboration due to a mutual friend, really. And we just thought that it was like this like wild fucking funky song, and yeah, man, it's cool, man. So we just, and also just being able to represent like a woman, like a sort of avant-garde musician, woman musician in music right now, is something that we're very, you know, we want to do. So we hopped on that, and yeah, that's coming out at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's cool. Looking forward to that. Hey, a couple things here real fast, and we'll wrap up with you. I know you got some festival dates coming up, man. You guys just have to chomp at the bit to play some of these big festival dates, don't you?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's some like legendary acts that we just never thought that we'd even, not like, let alone, you know, be on the same stage as them, but like, you know, we didn't even know if we could afford to be at their actual shows and their concerts. So the fact that we're like sharing, you know, a dressing room compound with these legendary acts is just, it's just fascinating, really, at the end of it all. It's like what music can do for you and how it can change your life. And it really has for us.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you were talking about working with Travis and this kind of stuff. It's like, man, this this band and the success it's had has really opened up some avenues for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, 100%, man. I think that we're very fortunate. And I understand, you know, I always say this, man. I think that there's a huge element of time and place and luck.
Yeah.
You know, when you succeed in music, I think that there are so many talented, amazing artists out there that won't get the shine or recognition that they deserve. And I always have to sit back and remember that, you know, not to discredit any of our, like, we've been doing this for, I mean, over 15 years. Mm. You know, we've been doing this since we were kids, and we worked extremely hard, and we've sacrificed so many things in our lives. But, you know, we're still humble enough to understand that there is an element of luck here, and we're very fortunate to be in the position we're in. And I always take the time out to shout out to all the homies and all the artists out there and activists as well that are putting in all the work that aren't getting the recognition they should. You know, I want to really honor them by trying our hardest and being as, again, authentic and as hardworking as we can.
All right. Final two things here for you: music or bands that would shock people that you listen to or that you're interested in.
Honestly, yeah, I'm not very good at that question because I'm very open about everything. I honestly, and I'm not just saying this, I do listen to like literally anything I think is cool. So I'm trying to think if I, like, just for the sake of answering the question, what's something we listen to, Drew, that like people wouldn't, I'm with my best friend right now.
Okay.
What's something we listen to that people wouldn't like think we listen to or something? Right? Yeah. We're not very good at this question because we're open about. There's a band called Hocus Pocus, a song called Focus.
Focus, yeah, that's from like the 70s, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that song's cool, and people think that I'm kidding, but I actually do think it's pretty cool.
All right, final thing here for you, Jason. Are you ready? This is the big one. This is going to end.
Yeah.
This is going to end everything that, you know, every discussion everyone has ever had about this. Sammy All Hagar right. or David Lee Roth? What do you say?
Oh, Sammy. Hey, what would you say, Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth? David Lee Roth. Yeah, David Lee Roth.
Diamond Dave. Yeah, the front man. There you go. So, hey,
yeah,
man.
Like, there's just like a cool, fucking cool sort of like essence about him, right?
I'll tell you, man. Sammy Hagar is like the Jimmy Buffett of rock, though. That guy's always throwing a party somewhere. So,
yeah, that's true too. Yeah, but maybe that's. Yeah, man. I guess you're right. Yeah.
Have you had a chance to meet any of these big celebrities? Like, who's someone that you met? You're like, holy crap! I can't even believe I just met him or her.
I met Stevie Wonder.
Oh, at nice.
An airport in Perth. Yeah, that was pretty amazing. That's because I've only gone up to two people in my entire life. One of them being Zach from Rage Against the Machine, actually, to thank him, and then the other one was Stevie Wonder, and I literally ran up to him and stopped him from getting on his plane to say thank you for everything he'd done and for writing Master Blaster.
Yeah, good old Motown guy right there.
Oh yeah, man, one of the best.
Right here in right here in Detroit. So, well, listen, man, have a great summer of touring and whatnot. Strength in Numbers is out. Congratulations on that and the full length, and we'll see you around here in Detroit. And thanks so much for your time, Jason. It's been fun.
Thank you, brother.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Jason from Fever 333 today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And pretty good dude right there. I'd like to see him live and you know, check him out. That's an intense band. And like I was talking about, their one video for their latest single reminds me of something, you know, Rage Against the Machine, you know, in the streets of the big city and stuff like that. So, if you get a chance, go check them out and grab their tunes and stuff. Like I said, intense is one way to describe those guys. And definitely like one of those activist type bands, like a Rage Against the Machine and stuff like that. So, anyways, Meltdown here, joined alongside, as usual, by Al Beck. And also, Janelle joins us, too.
Hi.
As he's going to be helping us out with rock news today.
Janelle has no idea what he's getting himself in for.
No. Al doesn't either, actually. No. He does this all the time. So.
I'm here most episodes. All the ones that no one hears.
That's right.
That's what I'm here for.
So, yeah, Al, you know, Al does kickstart the number dive when we get in here. So, it's just, you know, if you go back and look at the numbers, Al's on the one with the least amount. So, but that happens. What are you going to do? So,
this is like my make a wish or something. I don't know. I don't know why he keeps having me on.
Yeah, this is the rock news you can use or not or whatever.
Yeah.
So let's start with the big news of the week. Of course, last podcast we had Nita Strauss on. By the way, we did talk about Tool, and they've been jamming a couple new songs.
Yeah, a couple of new songs. We got a date now.
Yeah, two new songs that they've been putting in their set, and it took up half the show.
That's right. Well, like 12 minutes a piece. Yeah.
That's right. So the date for Tool. What do you say?
August 30th. Like right out of the gate. Not going to make you wait for it. August 30th. And that was revealed on their Twitter account with this kind of trippy little video, which Janelle can see here on my computer.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of wavy, and it says August 30th. But Maynard did confirm that, in fact, yes, May 30th is the date for the new album.
August.
Did I say?
You said May.
May? Yeah. Well, it is May right now. August 30th. I think I probably said it like seven times, too.
You can't wait for this one, can you?
That's right. Yeah, this is all great information on the rock news that you can use or not.
This really fills in with the or not part.
Yeah. So. Well, what I thought was kind of cool is they were talking about this on stage, the August 30th release date. Maynard actually encouraged fans to get their phones out for the announcement. Even said, all right, everyone, take out your phones. Security, stand down and let these heifers do what they want to do with their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made the big announcement that August 30th would be the date for the new album.
They must have new PR, huh?
Yeah.
Like, hey, get some free advertising, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's a good job on Maynard's part, I guess, because, yeah, he's not used to doing that kind of stuff. So I'll tell you, this is really going to be one. It's been a long time since a rock record came out, I think, that really, like, really busted open and sold a lot. And I have a feeling this one's going to be one, you know? I mean, the last Metallica record did pretty well, but this is really going to be take the world of rock by storm. So hopefully there's some really good stuff on there, man.
Yeah, so. I hope so, too. And it's been, 2006 since the last Tool album? And
it's been that long.
You know, it was my first year here when that came out. It was 2006.
Man. Yeah, I was going to say 13 years. So, it would be, 13 years. But
and this current album's been in the works longer than Chinese Democracy was, I think.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I know.
I think maybe another year or two you'd have it. But, it's funny because, like, you know, I was talking about this with Bumblefoot before with Chinese Democracy. They were working on this record all along. I'm not sure how long Tool has been working on this record, but the technology changed so much from the first chord that was recorded on Chinese Democracy until the very end.
Yeah,
you know, right. the technology was completely different.
Yeah.
And so, that looks cool. August 30th for the Tool dates, and I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, tour and the whole thing. Of course, those guys have a bunch of dates lined up here in 2019.
It is nice to have Tool in the news so much. So I think this is the third podcast in a row that we've ended up talking about them. You know, they might be coming to streaming services. They've got a couple couple of songs, new songs out there. We got the August 30th release date now.
It's got to be nice for those guys, you know, to have, you know, that kind of freedom to just do whatever they want. Back in the day, you know, bands would put out a record, tour. These guys put out a record, go do whatever they want, you know, go sell wine, you know, whatever they want to do, and then pretend to put out a record, then not, or whatever. It doesn't matter. So, but hell yes, in the news as well, you know, of course, the passing of Vinnie Paul, were approaching the 1-year anniversary of that coming up here in about a month or so.
Wow,
I guess
already.
I guess they got Roy from Stone Sour to fill in.
Yeah,
for Vinnie Paul.
We were debating off mic how exactly you say his last name. What did you call
him? I go Mayorga.
Mayorga.
Yeah, you got the tongue roll in there. Mayorga. Oh, yeah, I can't do it. All right. But yeah, from Stone Sour, it looks like he's going to be filling in the Vinnie Paul role. Now, all that's confirmed is the special tribute show that's taking place in Las Vegas at the House of Blues on May 11th of this year, and that is actually in May. This time. But yeah, it's Hell Yeah, celebrating the life of Vinnie Paul Abbott, one night only. And so he's going to be filling in there. Now, obviously, they got that new album coming out. It doesn't say anything about touring or if he's going to fill in long term or what the deal is. We just know just for that one show in Vegas.
That would be cool. That was, by the way, the last place I ever saw Vinnie.
Yeah, so we're going to do him for that video that, is that still pinned to your page?
Yeah, the video is pinned on my Twitter page at Meltdown WRIF, and I think after the anniversary of his death, I think I'm going to probably, you know, get that out there. But it was
you just happened to run into him there, right? Like, you weren't supposed to meet him or anything, you just...
No, but the Guns N' Roses had played earlier in the night.
That's right.
So then what happened was, you know, now it's midnight, and Steel Panthers, they go on stage around midnight, so I saw him around 11:30, and he was walking in, and of course, you know, he walks in first before everybody else, everyone's like, yelling, hey, Vinny, so then I walk in and he's at the bar and he's there with like some of the guys in the band and a couple of his buddies and whatnot. And he was wrecked. He was hammered. After that Guns N' Roses concert, man, he was just totally gone.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, I said, you know what? I said, if I just say my name, then I'll get his attention. So he's like on the bar and he's literally got his elbows up on the bar and his head down like he's almost like sleeping at the bar.
Yeah.
And I go, VP, it's Meltdown. And all of a sudden I hear, from Detroit? And then it was on.
Yeah.
And
well, it's cool that guy used to go and show up to stuff.
Jade
was telling me a story. We had that that thing with I Prevail. Of course, we had a couple of the guys in the studio with us.
Yeah.
But at their big record listening party that they did with us, she asked him about Vinnie Paul was in the crowd for one of their shows in Vegas, I think.
Oh, Vinnie was... I mean, I ran into Vinnie Paul one time. I ran into him actually two times in Vegas on two different days. Not even talking about the House of Blues show. I've ran into Vinnie Paul three times now that I think about
it,
in Vegas. Yeah. One time I get off the airplane, and I'm just walking through the hotel, and there's VP. I'm like, VP, what's happening? He's like, hey, Meltdown comes over. He's a little more sober.
Yeah.
The next day, I see him at Shinedown and in Breaking Benjamin. Yeah, he didn't miss any shows, dude.
Yeah, well, this I Prevail. Jade was the one who broke the news to them. She thought they knew that he was at their show, and she mentioned it to them, and they're like, wait, Vinnie Paul was there? Did we suck that night? How were we? Were we okay? I don't know.
It's so funny because I walk through and I see Vinnie at the Shinedown show, and I give him a fist pump and whatnot. And I was there with one of the sales accountant's husbands.
Yeah.
And he goes, holy, dude, Vinnie Paul just fist pumped you like you know him. I go, I've seen Vinnie a few times.
Right, he knows. You're from Detroit?
That's right, from Detroit. So anyways, that video that's on my thing, I actually said, hey, Vinnie, let's get a quick picture. He goes, hey, is that thing got video? Let's do a video. And right at the very beginning of the video, you can hear him say, all right, you got that rolling, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, that's cool. So, and by the way, I was thinking about this as well, not to get off on a tangent on Hell Yeah and Roy, but I don't know anyone else named Roy. That's a name you don't hear very often.
You don't hear it very often.
The late, great Roy Clark.
You don't know Roy Clark, dude.
I'm trying to think if I know a Roy.
I don't think I do. Except for that Roy right there.
No, I don't.
He's a good dude, so congratulations to him. Hey, recently I've been kind of filling up on documentaries on Netflix, and they got some good ones. I watched the Johnny Cash one the other day.
Oh, nice.
Mm. There was one about the Crossroads, about Robert Johnson selling his soul to the devil, becoming the best blues man in the world. Do you know about that, Al?
No.
And so I think that dude only recorded like 28 songs or something, and some consider him like like the greatest blues guitarist ever.
Yeah, you know, our boss Mark was telling me about this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he inspired Clapton and all these guys, you know what I'm saying? So now Led Zeppelin's working on this doc, eh?
Yeah, that's right. So obviously Led Zeppelin's celebrating their 50th anniversary. They've been doing a bunch of different stuff for that, including an online web series, but this is like a full-fledged documentary, which we don't have a release date or a title yet, but we are hearing that it is now in post-production. Features some new interviews with Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, and John Paul Jones, and also some rare archival interviews from, of course, the late John Bonham for this thing as well.
Yeah, I told you before, the only book I think I ever read in high school was Hammer of the Gods. And I did a book report on it, and I handed it in late. Otherwise, I would have got a better grade. That's what
have you read any books since high school?
Nah, not really.
No, that's... Maybe the Heroin Diaries or something.
Yeah, actually, I haven't even read that.
wait for the movie to come out. Yeah.
Speaking of classic rockers, this Woodstock thing is...
Oh, my God, yeah.
What's going on with that?
Yeah, so Woodstock, well, first of all, let's just say we've been talking a lot about Woodstock 50, and it is a mess. So let's just move right past that. We're gonna sidestep Woodstock 50.
It sounds like
50.
That Fyre Festival thing.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? It's a big anniversary, celebrating 50 years since... God, there's a lot of 50th anniversaries. ZZ Top this year's.
Me?
Oh, well, there you go. Now we're going to move, again, sidestep right past that. But we've got the definitive 50th anniversary archive of Woodstock. It is a 38-disc box set.
Wow, holy crap.
That's coming out here. It's made up of 432 tracks, of which 267 are previously unreleased.
What? Wow. Now, this is from the original Woodstock?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
there's that much of it that's unreleased, huh?
That's right, yeah. So, I had a date and I lost it. So, probably sometime in May, I'll just make that up.
Yeah. May 30th, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, Janelle, one of the rules here on the Talking Rock podcast is that you're not allowed any questions.
No follow-up questions.
So, no follow-up questions because Al has no idea what's going on.
Gotcha.
Okay. He just punches up websites.
Oh, my God, it's priced. I'm clearly just reading this story for the first time, parts of it. It's priced at $799.98.
Okay. Hey,
8 cents.
Yeah, check please.
Yeah, and 98 cents. It's a bargain.
Yeah, that's I'll pass on that. Speaking of something cool, though, Lizzie Hale's got her own line of guitars coming out. Now, this is kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Lizzie is so great to talk to hang out with.
Yeah.
And she's just, I can't say enough good things about Lizzie Hale and stuff. So what's the deal with her guitar? I might have to get one and have it signed and, you know, throw it
up on the
wall.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I don't know why I like doing this on the podcast, but when I find out about an artist getting a new signature series, I like to just throw it out there. It's not much to say about it, but yeah, Hailstorm's Lizzie Hale is getting her own signature series Epiphone guitar, which I don't know, I like that.
Now, stuff. Is there a price for that? That's got to be cheaper than that stupid Woodstock.
It's got to be cheaper than the Woodstock. I mean, it's Epiphone. I do not have a price listed here.
I got a Zach Wilde, guitar there that he signed for me, which is really killer, and stuff like that. And I got a Slash, Les Paul, which he signed for me, which is cool, too. And I'd like to have one of those.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It would be cool. I've got one signature series guitar. I've got a Tom Araya signature series bass.
Oh, you do?
From Slayer.
Oh,
yes. And it's signed by three of the guys.
Oh, who signed it?
Probably Kerry King, Tom Araya, and Jeff Hanneman.
Oh, you didn't get it signed?
No. It's signed. It signed. I didn't get it personally signed. No.
Well, that's pretty cool. Those three.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Gary Holt is going to be on the podcast coming up here. You should get him to sign it.
I should, yeah.
You know, he's doing it in-store.
Yeah.
A little quick plug for my friend at Rock City Music the day before they play here. So coming up in a couple weeks. So.
Gary Holt's such a great guitarist, man. I'll tell you, one of my favorite concert experiences I've had was seeing him play with Exodus at, you know, a little club, and it was... The room was empty. Like, this is back in 2006. There was practically no one there, which offended me because Exodus is one of my top thrash metal bands. I love Exodus.
Right? Yeah.
I love Exodus. And, but you know what? Here's the thing. Even though the room was empty, you looked at Gary Holt, you wouldn't know, man. Smiles ear to ear. He's doing all the 80s tricks, throwing the guitar around him. You know, his body. He didn't care if there was three people there or 3 million. He was doing a show, and it was great.
I loved it. Gary's, like I said, he's doing that in-store coming up at Rock City Music in Livonia the day before the Slayer show. And I don't know my dates in front of me here right now, but Gary's great. I hosted it last time he was there. He's a super nice guy. And super funny. You know, he go up there and rip rip off, you know, take questions from the crowd. He was fantastic. Yeah. Speaking of that guitar trick, though, dude, this is going to blow your mind. So I'm at the Harpo's gig a couple weeks ago when I had Saliva on the podcast. I interviewed those guys there that night. Well, the opening band was Tantric, and I'm standing on the side of the stage watching Saving Abel, who came up second, right? And I look behind me, and there's this guy. And he's standing there, and he's got this big, like, black hair and this kind of facial scruffy hair, and he's got this Cinderella shirt on. I'm thinking to myself, that guy looks like Jeff LaBar from Cinderella. Cinderella shirt on. He's got the big, long hair. It looks just like him, right? Anyway, so we go through the night and stuff. I may have even commented to him how much he looked like him or something along those lines. So later on the night, we're on the bus, and on Saliva's bus, and the guy Tantric guys, they're just, you know, people just kind of mixing and milling about. The tension that guy right there is telling me that he's talking to the head guy, the head roadie for Saliva, and they were talking about Kevin DeBrow from Quiet Riot and stuff and blah blah blah. So this guitar player from Tantric says, "Oh yeah, my dad knew him and stuff." Who's your dad? Oh, my dad's Jeff LaBar. I'm like, holy crap, dude, you look just like him. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, Jeff LaBar's kid is in Tantric.
Oh, that's no kidding. Awesome.
And he looks just like him.
Oh, that's funny.
So
he's rocking the Cinderella shirt.
How did he hand down that trick, man? How isn't he doing that on stage?
I don't know. Well, I didn't see their set, but maybe he is. I don't know. Yeah, if anyone's never seen Cinderella, yeah, the guy's Eric Brittingham. And so I said to him, and maybe I'm speaking a little bit out of school, but I said, hey, listen, dude, I said, what's the deal? How come they won't get back together? He goes, my dad, you know, he's still drinking, you know, and the whole thing. And Tom doesn't want to deal with Eric and, you know, and Fred and blah, blah, blah. And so he kind of threw everyone under the bus except for Tom. He says, my dad's happy being a chef or a cook or whatever he's doing. I'm like, okay, well, cool, man.
Good for him then, you know, if he's happy.
Like I said, maybe I'm speaking a little bit out of school, but finally, speaking of guitar players, I wasn't going to talk about this one, but Kirk Hammett fell on stage the other night, and this is like kind of like clickbait for all the rock websites and whatnot, but I guess you said that he put it on his own social media.
That's exactly why I want to talk about it. Well, there was something else I wanted to mention about it too, but I think they're over in Europe playing right now, and there's a close-up video. I mean, it's Kirk Hammett's feet and legs, and he's over at the pedals, and he's doing a solo, so he's working the wah pedal. And then at one point towards the end of the solo, he just slips and tumbles.
Yeah.
And, people fall on stage all the time. And he's fine. He got up, and he was able to get back into it. It's not like a Dave Grohl thing where he falls off the stage and has got to do the whole tour in the throne from there on.
Right.
But I wanted to talk about it because, you know what? The guy fell down. He's got a sense of humor about it. He posted it on his Instagram page. So if you want to see the video, go find Kirk Hammett on Instagram and watch the video. But the other reason I wanted to mention this is you're watching it, he's playing, he goes down, distinctly you hear the lead guitar is now missing. Damn it, Metallica plays live. When you go see Metallica, you're seeing Metallica. There's no backing tracks. When Kirk Hammett falls, you got no lead guitar, brother.
Yeah, that is true because, there's really not much to back as far as, you know, some of those, you know, a lot of those songs. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Some of these bands do all these tricks in production and stuff, and so then they have to bring that stuff with them when they play live.
Yeah.
You know, but, it's good that, he decided to post that. You know, because, like, I saw that the other day, and I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
He did say that in his Instagram post that it had been raining all day and the wah pedal was wet, so when he went to move he slipped and just tumbled.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, I was on the side of stage one time and I was watching Zakk Wylde play and Zakk Wylde has these pieces of plastic over his wah pedals.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I said to his guy, I go, why has he got all that plastic? He goes, because he sweats so much he'll short everything out. And seriously, and it's not like plexiglass, it's like plastic.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's up there and it's unbelievable and he must do this every show.
Yeah.
And this was at an indoor theater show, so it's not raining or nothing, you know? So anyways, well, if you made it this far in the podcast, God bless you. Give it a 5-star rating if you get a chance. Write a review and give out your socials there. Al
Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, Janelle, I'll give you a chance. Go ahead.
I'm on Twitter at Radio JNJ.
Radio JNJ. Now we have Meltdown WRIF, of course, Talking Rock with one. Hey, speaking of that, Gary Holt did say he was going to come on the show coming up here in the next couple of weeks. So we're just trying to tie up some loose ends. Talked to him, I think it was last year. Man, really good guy to talk to. And like I said, Slayer, I call him Slayer. See, that's Al's nickname, Slayer. So you got to get your bass signed by Gary. Or at least give it to me. I'll get it signed for you.
That'd be cool.
It's the least I can do for you. And I always try to do the least.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. We'll do it all over again real soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.